And it's sparks are flying, passion strong. I am the blacksmith singing the hammer and the anvil song. I thought to make an anchor.
Okay, song is titled Hammer and Anvil from The Longest Johns. A good way to get us into our final segment of the day as we talk blacksmithing. You know, there are a lot of benefits to working with your hands. You feel accomplishment. It provides a sense of calm. And if you're crafty or handy, you might be nodding your head right now. Larry Mueller here, talking about one way to work with your hands, an extremely hot metal. It's called blacksmithing. And James Michael Jones is with us now. He's been a blacksmith for more than 30 years. He owns and operates a custom shop on the Bayfield Peninsula. And as we talk with James, I hope you will join in. Do you have questions about working in a skilled trade? Do you have blacksmith experience? If you work in the trades already, would you recommend it to others? Why or why not? Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. James Michael Jones, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi. Yeah, well, thanks for taking time to have us on.
You know,
it's an honor to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you with us. I was thinking back on this. When I was a kid, you know, I was raised on a farm near Cottage Grove, Wisconsin. There was a blacksmith shop in Cottage Grove, and I think the guy's name was Gus Dukert. And when we had a problem on the farm with a hitch, maybe, that broke, it would go to Gus, and Gus would fix the darn thing.
Right.
And that's the traditional way of blacksmithing. What is blacksmithing to you?
Oh, wow, yeah. It's a lot about that. It's a lot about, the big picture is really, it's about service. How do you help, you know, whatever's going around you with your hot anvil and, you know, hot iron and anvil and forge, really, you know. It's really not that complicated. Like, you get it hot, hit it hard. And I just took a road trip down to Madison. And one of the things that we discussed was how there's all these little towns every 10 miles. And every 10 miles is about how far a horse could travel loaded in a day. And then they would need new shoes. And so while we travel all over, we have to slow down for all these little towns, right? Every 10 or 12 miles, there was a blacksmith shop serving the needs of whatever it was, wagon hitch or horseshoes or whatever. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's morphed over time a bit.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Now there's all different branches. There's different specialties. And everybody has different definitions even of what a blacksmith is.
And I think you, as I looked at your website, you view it as an art form.
Yeah, I do. I use it primarily to create art. Art with, I would call it a small A art. Again, right? You know, so you got your fine arts, and then, so I try to add an aesthetic quality to the tools of our lives.
Does that make any
sense?
Well, I have looked at some of the things you do, and it looks like pretty nice artwork to me. I mean, talk about what you, before we go to the phones, I know we already have Gary and Madison who wants to make a comment, but what kinds of things do you produce?
Again, it's, you know, it mostly falls, for me, it falls into the line of tools. So it could be a handrail. I just got done making a set of gates. Currently working on a small decorative bridge, but it's a tool to cross a ravine. And so, yeah, it's mostly I call it architectural. It falls under the heading of an architectural type work. That is what relates to how we live.
Yeah. Gary and Madison, let's give you a chance to join in. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, my great-great-grandfather from Sweden opened up a blacksmith shop in Chicago back in the 1800s. And it continued through the family. And in the 70s, after I graduated high school, I went directly to work into the mill, into the forging mill. And I worked on very large piston, steam-driven piston hammers. That one that I drove was probably almost two stories high. That's how tall this was. And we would forge 14-inch billets at 2,100 degrees, making large bars, hexagon bars, discs, rings. And I did that for about 7 years as a young man. And I'll tell you what, that was hot, heavy work. We worked 9 hours a day, 8 hours on Saturday. And it was a very dangerous place.
Yeah, what kind of work specifically did you do there?
Well, I did all of it. I trained to be a blacksmith on one of the hammers. I was a helper on the other side. There was open die forging.
Yeah, okay.
I was a helper on the other side of the end of the die.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell you what, that was a sad.
It was a lot of work from the sound of it.
Yeah, and I bet you that a lot of the things you made are still working today.
Wouldn't doubt it a bit. I wouldn't doubt it a bit. Gary, thanks. So he did it for 7 years. That's a fairly long time. You've been doing it, though, for 30 years or more.
I think, though, that if you took my experience and put it against his, he's probably pounded a ton more iron than I ever dreamed of touching.
Gary, thank you so much for calling. How did James? How did you get involved in this whole business?
Yeah. You know, I got to give a shout out to Dan Nauman out of Bighorn Forge out of West Bend, and Matt Harvey out of Campbellsport. These guys, if you want to learn to be a blacksmith, don't go to the internet for it. Go find a blacksmith to learn from. And both these guys, Dan Nauman and Matt Harvey, they took me under their wing. And then I got real fortunate to have good teachers. And we traveled with this group called ABANA. That's the Artist Blacksmith Association of North America. And they're like the depository for all this old knowledge kind of stuff. And so we don't learn this stuff on our own, right? I had some great teachers, and yeah, that's my shout out to Dan and Matt. Yeah, thanks, guys.
What drew it to you in the first place?
The creativity, really. You know, here's something I figured out. You can take a cubic meter of steel, right? A cubic meter of steel and draw it into a wire so thin that's 5/1000ths of an inch in diameter, and it'll go around the world.
Cubic meter.
A cubic meter of steel drawn to a wire, and you can do it. And then you can ball it all back up and make that same cubic meter of steel again. And to me, that's just phenomenal. That's like the most creative thing any human being could ever imagine doing.
Yeah,
and I love being a part of that process, however small, you know.
I was involved in the once took my daughter Emily when she was much younger. She's 21 now, but she was maybe 8 or 9 We went to the Midwest Fire Fest in in Cambridge, Wisconsin. And we both got to work with a blacksmith. They were setting up and you could make your own little thing. And I worked with a blacksmith and got to make a bottle opener. And Emily made something else, and I've forgotten what she made. It was a little artistic thing, but it was really fascinating to work with that metal and to have somebody there really to do, step by step instruction as we went along. It just made it a lot of fun.
Having somebody to facilitate the learning process.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that something you've done? It sounded maybe this artistic artist blacksmith association has done work like that, or maybe you've been involved in something like that.
Yeah. I teach up at a facility up in Minnesota. Shout out to North House Folk School. And they teach all kinds of hands-on trades, old historic trades. And so I really love teaching because it's like turning on these little light bulbs. and people get to, it moves the process. I always say, people, we know that the old expression of a picture is worth 1,000 words. A demonstration is worth 1,000 pictures.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. By the way, that was about 10 years ago. I think I know I still have that bottle opener. It sits on top of my refrigerator.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's great.
I don't know. So, I mean, what got you interested in this trade in the first place?
Yeah, I think mostly, my first came from the Foxfire series of books, and that was, I think a lot of people know that reference of Foxfire, that's where I first read about it. And then it was just always held a fascination because it's one of those things that it's not so easy to just pick up and do but there's so many different things that you can do with it. So, the utility of it, as an artist, it really just allowed me to express whatever was on my mind. It could be a chisel or a knife or a gate or railing or purely sculptural. It just, for me, it was just a personal connection that,
mushroom. Mushroom, so to speak. James Michael Jones, our guest today. He's been a blacksmith for more than 30 years, owns and operates a custom shop on the Bayfield Peninsula. It's great to have him with us. And questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at blacksmithing today with our guest, James Michael Jones, blacksmith for more than 30 years, has a custom shop that he operates on the Bayfield Peninsula. So great place to be doing that for sure. Again, an experience or question, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Vernon Boyd had a comment, said that Racine was a hot spot for blacksmithing. You know anything about Racine as a hot spot for blacksmithing, James? He's wondering that.
Well, actually, one of the, not really Racine, I don't know much about the local Racine and scene in Racine, but Milwaukee actually has was historically the host of Cyril Kulnick. Cyril Kulnick was one of the one of the finest blacksmiths that the world has probably ever seen. And if you can get up to Milwaukee and go see the Cyril Kalnick Museum, yeah, it's jaw dropping. It's amazing what people can do with iron. I don't know so much about Racine, but I do know that you can go to Milwaukee and check out Cyril Kalnick.
Vern, this one in Plain, Wisconsin, called but couldn't stay with us. Drew Alexander in Virginia is a famous blacksmither. He goes around teaching. Okay. Do you know him, James, or work with him ever?
I never met Drew. There's quite a few people out there that, it's a pretty big, they say it's a lost art, and I say, nope, it's really not. So, yeah, I never heard of Drew Alexander, but maybe I have to look for him.
Dave in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dave.
Well, hi, Larry. This topic is just so fascinating for me. I grew up in a village outside of Milwaukee, Elm Grove, and Watertown Plank Road, which is a pretty well-known road for people down in southeastern Wisconsin. There was a blacksmith shop that was there even into the 60s when I was a kid. And I remember you'd always see the barn door open, and you could hear all of the things that were going on in there. And it was a touch of the past. And yet, there was still the modern part of the village. But you knew that had been there probably for 100 years. And eventually the business closed down, and they built a financial institution where it was. But they have a plaque on that financial building saying former home of the Saunders blacksmith shop, just so that people, can remember that part of the history. But I remember as a kid taking my trike down there because the little seat got broken off, and you took it in and they'd weld it for you, and then off I pedaled and went home.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's that service element again. As I think, a lot of times we wake up between the difference of what I decide I want to do and what other people decide they want me to do. And most days it has to do with, welding seat bikes on, stuff like that, right?
Dave,
so, yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, Dave, that's great. Thank you so much for calling. Well, I'm wondering about your business. You're in the Bayfield Peninsula.
Yes.
I mean, you must have enough business to keep you going. And you talked about, fixing a bike, but what else do you do?
Well, I think the majority of my work has really come from architectural applications, right? I do a lot of, but they're designed around their architectural applications. And so, yeah, I do a lot of gates. Quite a few railings, fireplace sets. I did work for the Bayfield Inn and different locations around, and mostly, I wouldn't want to say wealthy, but people that are working with some money able to afford my work. And,
yeah.
But
mostly, you keep you busy.
Yeah. I mean, and busy is a relative term. I'm a one-man shop, and there are times when I let the work pile up a bit and do other things. And, part of the lifestyle for me has to do with being free to make my own decisions on what I choose and not choose. So, but, yeah, it's complicated.
What's the... what are the tools? I mean, we know there's, a hammer and anvil, I guess, is associated
there's
with
the
this.
Hammer and the anvil. I was just up at the shop today, I'm working up there right now. And we have a poem in the blacksmith from Francis Whitaker. He said, if the eye can't see it, the hand can't make it. And if the tongs can't hold it, the hammer can't hit it. So tongs is really one of those unsung heroes of the blacksmith shop. So you got your hammer, your anvil and your tongs. I bring mechanical hammers, sort of small versions of the industrial type of hammer to the work, and modern welding and stuff like that. But hammer, anvil, and tongs.
But you need some fire, don't you?
Well, then you get your fire on that. Yes, right, exactly. Exactly, yeah. I use a lot of gas. I burn propane in a larger forge. And then I also have solid fuel for either charcoal or coal. And a lot of modern blacksmiths are using induction forging. They're actually using the same technology that we use in induction stoves and stuff. So three different heat sources.
And there are, you start with a piece of metal. I understand.
Yep.
And there's like eight different paths
or something, right,
that you can take with that metal. Give us a couple of examples, perhaps.
Sure. Well, first step is to draw things out. We can make it longer and longer and longer, and the point becomes thinner and thinner and thinner. And then we can upset things and push back on them. It takes a lot more energy to upset things than it does to draw them out. Then we can bend things. We can, you know, take a straight thing and make it curved, or we could take a curved thing and make it straight. And then that's right. I mean, it's very
sure.
simple stuff. You know, it's like ABCs. We can cut things. And we can cut them all the way off or not all the way off. And punch a hole right through things. Outside of that, then, becomes some twisting we can do and welding. We can join things. You know, take 1 + 1 = 1 sort of thing. And then we can heat treat things. We can make them things harder or softer. And that's about 8 things. I didn't have my list in front of me, but that's
about
off the
it.
Top of my head. Yeah, that's about it. That's all you can do.
You know,
it's like ABCs of blacksmithing. So then we create short sentences, and we create chapters, and we create verse and rhythm, and
sounds,
put all those things in there.
Sounds kind of philosophical.
We do get a little philosophical. It's one of the things I enjoy a lot about the process. I can put a lot of my mind into it. And yeah, exactly. It's a lot of fun that way.
I was thinking back to my day, or my, it wasn't a whole day, but it was my time, let's put it in my daughter's time, when we were at the Midwest Fire Fest in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just showed up. I had my normal clothes and all that. And the blacksmith that was working with me was much better prepared. And kind of took over some parts that were, you know, where there was some danger involved, because it can be dangerous. You have special clothing or, you know, and that sort of thing that you use?
I try to. I mean, I wear glasses because I need them in my daily life. I do wear, because I do it so often, I'll wear earmuffs, and I'll wear a respirator if I feel like I'm kicking up a lot of dust. We try not to wear gloves, although, you know, again, it's a lot of time, you know, dependent upon the actual task, I guess. And but mostly, you know, I think, you know, we don't really need full protective gears, but a lot of it depends. Are you making little hooks, or are you doing production forging of large scrolls and stuff? And, but yeah, I do use PPEs.
Do you teach blacksmithing at the North House Folk School?
Yeah.
That you must get some enjoyment and fun from that.
I love it. Yeah, it's not, well, I mean, there's nothing like sharing something that you love with people that want to learn it, right? You know?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, maybe some people don't see it that way, but for me, it's like I said before, like going around turning on these little light bulbs and And there's so much that a person can learn when they can ask the question. And when they, you know, it's one thing to watch the video of some expert making a knife. It's another thing to have an expert watching you make the knife and saying, oh, well, if you just did this a little bit, or, oh, if you change your, you know, change the way you're holding this, or, oh, if you can pull this out now and make this move. The learning curve, the learning curve goes flat, you know, rather than just hitting a wall, right?
Well, I tell you what, it's been fun talking to you. And we have a link on our website to that class. James, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. And we will talk again at some point with James Michael Jones, blacksmith for more than 30 years. He works out of his custom shop on the Bayfield Peninsula. Thank you for joining us today. We got a team effort here. Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. And stay with us. Lots more in store on WPR News.
Hammer and his wife, and it's Sparks.